Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It's hour two. It's on a Tuesday. Lakers, Dodgers. If you live in L.A., what a night to be alive. Lakers, Dodgers tonight. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, FS2 for the rest of the show. We have baseball playoffs on FS1, so we get knocked over to FS2, which is sort of the playroom for us. We can party a little harder. Bosses don't watch. You know, they're all watching FS1 right now. Goulet, even more so than ever, just kind of zones out. It's a totally different vibe on FS2. So, Joy, tonight you got to make choices. I'll have mom. You know, it's just so good. Like, last night I went home. Wife's out of town. And so last night I go home, and it's great. Like, I just cocktail, DoorDash, and sat and watched two NFL games back and forth. And then tonight I get the Dodgers in the playoffs. I get the Lakers in the finals. Nobody's home, not even the dogs. DoorDash it, cocktail. It's such a great time.
Are you going to do another burger night?
No, tonight I'll probably do fish. I got to lighten up. I've just been eating like crap. You know, when sports is around, I eat worse.
Are you a big condiment guy?
Oh, I love condiments. Sometimes just eat them by themselves. Love them. Spicy mustard.
I'm a yellow mustard person.
Yeah, pesto.
Yeah, when I eat a burger, by the end of it, it's just kind of like slop.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so much stuff on it.
That's what I do as well.
Yeah.
So it's great to have you in. So Drew Bledsoe around the corner. It's the Herd Hierarchy. First time I've done it this year. I feel like every team, in fact, I feel good about 11 teams in the Herd Hierarchy, but I only have 10. So one of them, Tennessee, is 11th, but let's go with our 10.
Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
I'm going to go Cleveland Browns, number 10, over Tennessee because I think they're more explosive offensively. 30-plus points in three straight games. Only team to average 200 yards rushing per game this year. Most rushing touchdowns in the NFL with 8. Their defense, though I think it can be susceptible to the big play on the back end, has the most turnovers with 10. I think if you're in Cleveland, Kevin Stefanski feels like finally a grown-up, a teacher in the room for Baker Mayfield. I think Cleveland's a playoff team. That's what we predicted. I have them at 10.
Number 9.
The Colts. Now, they play this weekend, and I like the Colts to win. That's why I put them at 9. Their offense is not as explosive. Phillip Rivers exactly one touchdown pass in each of the games. But their defense is the best in the league right now. Number 1 in everything. Points, yards, third down, passing yards. Only team to allow fewer than 300 total yards in all 4 games this year. Again, a limited offense, but I think they beat Cleveland. If I'm wrong, I'll flip-flop them.
Number 8.
Steelers. Listen, they've beaten bad teams. That's what worries me. Giants, Broncos, Texans are a combined 0-9. But it's hard to run on them. You can't deny their front 7 personnel is out of this world good, and Tomlin's a defensive coach. Plus, they have Minkah Fitzpatrick behind that. 1 of 5 teams to average 25 points a game and fewer than 20. They've played bad teams. They are back. I don't know how high the ceiling is, but I'll put them at 8.
Number 7.
But I think Buffalo would beat them on a neutral field, so I have the Bills at 7. I love their coaching. I like their defense. Doesn't quite feel as ferocious as last year, but Josh Allen is the story. 15 touchdowns, 1 pick this season. Stephon Diggs has added a deep threat element they did not have. 3 games with a completion percentage of 70% or more. He looks like a baby Big Ben, but even more athletic. I really like Buffalo. They feel like a team capable, barring injuries, of doing all the things you need to do. Well coached, don't turn it over, good run defense, and an explosive dynamic at wide receiver.
Number 6.
Seattle. I don't know if Seattle is 6. I'm just putting them up there because of Russell Wilson. There's so much about Seattle I don't like. They have no pass rush. Their defense, they bat on the back end, but they hit. They've got some playmakers, and Russell Wilson is insane right now. He is the best player in the world. Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes, they can argue for number 2. I put them at 6 because I thought they'd beat Buffalo in a neutral field because of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. I think Buffalo's more complete. But there's, again, Russell Wilson's playing right now at a level that you just don't see. You, Tom Brady's best year, he wasn't this, because he didn't have the escapability. Seattle at 6.
Number 5.
Tampa Bay. This is interesting. Brady has increased his passer rating in each game. Brady's offense, total yardage, increased in every game. We knew the defense would be good. It's second best in the NFL against the run. But I like that Brady has now, it took him a month, he has found his guy. It's Mike Evans. So Brady has Leonard Fournette, and they're doing it, by the way, without Chris Godwin, and Leonard Fournette just got there and has been injured. This offense, O.J. Howard is out now for the year. I know that's bad news, but now they still have two really good tight ends. But I like they're getting better each week, and he has found Mike Evans as his go-to receiver.
Number 4.
Let's not sell all of our stock on Baltimore. I'm going to have them at number 4 because they're the only team in the league. 27 straight games rushing over 100 yards. Lamar Jackson is still really good. Am I concerned they're 0-10 when trailing at halftime in the last 2 years? Yes, that is something. It's not good. I think Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes and certain quarterbacks are better when trailing. But, you know, they got the Bengals coming up at Philadelphia. They're going to post some more wins here. I think we'll really know more about them. They face the Steelers in Week 7, at the Colts Week 9, at the Patriots Week 10. This is still a championship-level football team that just frankly doesn't match up with Kansas City very well, and who does?
Number 3.
New England. They win that game with Cam Newton. I'm not going to punish them for last night because Cam Newton's coming back according to stories this morning. Folks, best right now, only team to hold the Chiefs without a touchdown in the first half in the Mahomes era, they've done it 3 times. This is a real football team. They just need Cam. I also would love if they went out and got a deep threat, but I'm not going to punish them. Their upcoming schedule's got a lot of wins. Broncos, Jets. I just think they're really good with Cam. Their defense has 8 takeaways, that's second most. And again, they have not played bad teams. They have played Seattle. They have played Kansas City. They're playing real football teams. I have them at 3.
Number 2.
But Green Bay's win last night, missing their top 2 wide receivers, was the most impressive they had been. Again, the protection is excellent right now. Aaron's comfortable. He's got a running game. He's got time to throw. He's got multiple tight end and wide receiving targets. Aaron's got 13 TDs, no picks. They also have the best point differential in the NFL at 51. And through the years, there's 2 things that generally matter in the NFL playoffs. What are you averaging yards per play? That matters because it means you're explosive. And what's your point differential? Baltimore's was huge last year. Those are things that matter as the seasons go on. Really great teams blow about 7 teams out over the course of the season. That's what the Niners in Kansas City and Baltimore did last year. Packers number 1 in the NFL in point differential. It matters.
Number 1.
Kansas City, but I don't think it is by much as I thought a couple of weeks ago. I think Cam in New England would have beaten them last night. I think Aaron Rodgers could beat them. Baltimore doesn't match up well, but I think if Seattle's O-line is not as bad as I think, they could maybe run the football on them. I'm going to give them the number 1 team, but I don't think they're quite as dominating as I thought 2 weeks ago. And with that, he played in the NFL for a decade and a half, a Super Bowl champ, a 4-time Pro Bowler, 2nd most passing yards in Patriots history. Number 1 is, you know, Tom. Drew Bledsoe now joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Listen, we know coaching matters. And in your career, you had some great coaches, and that sometimes personalities don't, they just don't work, and that's okay. But it does feel like, Drew, that Aaron Rodgers is at least, he's more comfortable, more simpatico. You know, he and Matt LaFleur generationally are closer in age. Maybe that's it. I mean, can you speak to that? Kind of just connecting with a guy, connecting with a coach.
Sure, yeah. You know, it does matter, Colin. You know, the guy that I had 8 different coordinators in the time that I played. There were a couple of guys that I really connected with, and the big thing that happens is it's almost like you're reading each other's mind. You know, I remember I was with Sean Payton just for 1 year in Dallas, and I'm on the field, and we run one play, and then I immediately know what play is coming next. You didn't really even have to call, you know, send the play in. And so you really get on the same page with the guy, and that can make life a lot easier. Plus, you know, shoot, they've got a healthy team, they're running the ball well, they're playing good defense, and all those things make life a lot easier for a quarterback.
So Belichick, Bill Belichick has a history outside of Russell Wilson of facing quarterbacks and Peyton Manning. He had his number for years. Big Ben. So not just good quarterbacks, you know, Hall of Fame guys. What do you think it is that Belichick is doing to Patrick Mahomes in four different first halves that are really making Patrick struggle game after game against Bill's defense?
You know, the thing that was always frustrating in playing against those defenses is that they do what's called pattern reading and pattern recognition, right? So what that means is based on your formation and then based on the release of the receiver, they anticipate what's coming. So they're not reacting. They're being proactive. And a lot of times it felt like the defenders were running the route ahead of your receiver. Or they would read something, and so, you know, one guy's crossing, so they would come off, and then there's another guy's safety that would cut the route. So it's not just covering guys. It's actually recognizing what you're doing, anticipating, getting in the middle of your route before your receiver even gets there. It requires incredibly smart defenders. It requires a ton of work on behalf of their staff in order to do that. But when they do, man, it's a real pain in the ass of the quarterback. It's really not fun.
Everybody but Russell Wilson appears to struggle. Speaking of Russell, I said this. I'm a kid from the Pacific Northwest. I don't know if I like the Seahawks. I just love Russell. I love what he's doing. But I look at it and I think he's a little bit of a life preserver for an offensive line, a tight end position, a secondary. I feel they're almost too reliant on Russell to save him. What do you see as somebody from the Pacific Northwest with the Seahawks?
Yeah, you know, I've heard it said before that a quarterback at the top of his game is kind of like good marinara sauce. You know, you can just put it over the top of everything and it covers whatever the flaws are in the meal. And, you know, Russell is that way a little bit right now. I do think the team is playing well around him. He does have some good weapons, better weapons than he's had in a little while. But boy, he is playing at an absolute elite level. And he's doing it sometimes where he's just got to create on his own. The thing that's always amazed me about Russ, though, is number one, he almost never makes the big mistake. And number two, you know, you watch him play and he runs around and makes plays with his legs. The guy never gets hit very hard. You know, you watch these other quarterbacks run around, and I know you can't hit the quarterback and all that now, but he just never takes the big hit, and that allows him to be available all the time. So it's been fun to watch.
I tend to support quarterbacks who I think are good but are struggling. Take Carson Wentz. I really like him. Big kid, big arm, good kid. But he has now dealt three straight years with incredible bad luck. He lost Frank Reich, a coach. He's lost multiple receivers, offensive line. Take your own career. I think there's a little mental fatigue that we forget sometimes. These are young kids. He's from a small town, small state. He goes to Philadelphia where they wake up angry. And, you know, he's losing people year after year. He loses coaches. He loses receivers. Did you ever get to a point in your career where there is a mental fatigue? Forget the physical stuff, that you feel like you're bailing water week after week.
Well, so here's the thing. So, you know, when you see the injuries that have come up for them, you know, and I hear this said, well, oh, I know they have a lot of injuries, but Carson still has to play it better, right? Well, but here's what happens, though, Colin. So you lose linemen, okay? And you're like, okay, we're going to have a little bit less time. Well, that means you have to process faster. It's like I would compare it in baseball. It'd be, you know, hitting a 100-mile-an-hour fastball versus an 87-mile-an-hour fastball. You just don't have as much time to make that decision, right? So that happens. But number two, man, anytime you have a defensive back on your show, ask them what their best friend is. And every one of them will tell you a great pass rush. And so that means you don't have enough time. Well, now the defenders can jump routes. They don't have to worry about double moves. They don't have to worry about, you know, going over the top. So now they're closer. And then you add to that that he's got receivers hurt. So he doesn't know exactly where guys are going to be. So you got to make faster decisions before you get hurt. You have to try to anticipate based on less information. And then you don't know where these guys are going to be. It's a really tough equation to try to solve, and if you're faced with trying to solve that over and over again while you're getting hit, there is no doubt there's some fatigue coming in when you have to deal with all of that.
So Brady every week, passer rating's a little better, the yardage is a little better, so he's figuring it out. But one of the things we said, I think it was last week, is that for the first time in Tom's life, he's got multiple running backs, multiple tight ends. He's got slot receivers. He's got deep receivers. He's clearly connected with Mike Evans. That is clearly the first guy he has a real connection with. But I do wonder with Tom is that he's trying to appease. He wants to ingratiate everybody to this offense. He's the old guy. They're the young kids. He wants to make everybody feel included. And I wonder sometimes if you can press as a quarterback, trying too hard to spread the ball around. It worked this weekend late, not early. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there is a tendency as a quarterback to try to feed everybody. You know, you got a lot of mouths to feed, right? And then you start talking about receivers, and they're, you know, by definition, they're kind of divas. So if they don't get the ball a little bit, then they want to go cry, and you have to go give them a big hug. So I do think that, you know, you can fall into that trap a little bit. But I do think what you'll see, you know, as the season progresses, and you saw this, and this is natural for every quarterback, including Tommy, you know, he starts to develop a real trust and rapport with certain guys. When the game's on the line, when they need a big play, you know, then, you know, you're going to rely on those guys. But at the same time, you know, there is that natural tendency to try to keep everybody happy if you can.
Finally, Tua. Justin Herbert comes out, and I'm like, oh, my God, he looks really good. And then Joe Burrow, with no support up front, looks really good. And so I'm sitting there with Tua, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting impatient. I want to see Tua play. And we made this argument yesterday, Joy and I did. So Miami may not only have their top 10 draft pick, they have Houston's number one. Houston, they could have two top 10 draft picks. Could I make the argument organizationally, Drew? Get Tua out there. There's three great quarterbacks. If he's overwhelmed, Burrow's not, Justin Herbert's not. The game is built for quarterbacks to be productive. If he's overwhelmed, I may just move up and get another quarterback. Arizona did, and it was the right move. Do you think we're nuts to think that an organization would think, let's just get him out there and see if he can play and tread water here?
You know, I think you have to be careful about what the situation is that you're putting him in, because I do think Tua is a special player. I really, really do. I think he's going to be successful. But what you don't want to do is put him out there in a situation that is going to hurt him, you know, from a development standpoint. You want to put him in a situation to succeed early, take care of him, keep the hits off him, and allow him to have some success. So if they're going to do that, I might, you know, if I'm looking at it, I might look at the schedule ahead, you know, hey, you know, when am I playing the Jets? Maybe I'll play him when we play the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, so he gets a win under his belt. But you don't want to do any damage. You know, it's the Dolphins are a team that are likely not a playoff team this year, but can be going forward with all the draft picks and all of that. But you want to make sure that if you're going to get him out there that you know, you help his development and don't set him back.
Okay. Double Back Winery in Walla Walla. You're clearly in the winery right now, right?
Yeah, we're actually right now we're in the middle of harvest. So our team, you know, shout out to Josh and Joe and CJ and all the guys that are working those 15-hour days right now, bringing fruit in and doing pump overs and all that stuff. I'll come help later on this week. But they're busting their tail, making great wine for us.
I have a question. When you own a winery, are you allowed, as long as it's labor intensive, to have a glass of wine or two at like 11:30 in the morning?
Well, it's called work, Colin. You know, yeah, you know, you should get a taste. It's called quality control. Now I will tell you that if I'm tasting on purpose for work, my palate is best in the morning. But if I'm doing that, then I actually generally, you know, will spit the wine out after tasting so that I can be productive that day. Because if you sit around and drink three glasses of wine with your breakfast, it kind of diminishes your productivity for the rest of the day.
You're telling me. Drew Bledsoe, everybody. Great seeing you, my man.
All right, Colin. I always appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Double Back. Great winery in Washington State. All right, we'll take a break. The Texans fired Bill O'Brien. I will support him. Not righteously, but I will support him to some degree. And one of my biggest knocks on the media is him getting fired and the reaction to it that's coming up.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, catch Carson Wentz and the Eagles as they take on Big Ben, Juju, and the Steelers, or other regional action. Check your local listing to the game in your area or watch it on the Fox Sports app.
Boost healthy T levels. Check it out, mdriveformen.com, the supplement I take every morning. So the reality is there's very little great in the world and very little terrible. Life is 80% pretty good, good, not quite as good as you'd like. Bill O'Brien is... this year, not quite as good as you like, but pretty good his entire career. Here's all you need to know. Belichick could not win in the NFL, nor could Pete Carroll without the right quarterback. Bill O'Brien won a division with Brock Osweiler. And then he did it again with Brian Hoyer. And then he did it twice with Deshaun Watson, a brand new kid, college to the pros. Four division titles. He won at Penn State post Jerry Sandusky. What a mess that was. What a mess. He actually won. I covered UNLV post Jerry Tarkanian. You have no idea, unless you've covered a program that's gone through controversy, how hard it is to recruit. Virtually impossible. He got Christian Hackenberg drafted. He won a division with Brock Osweiler. He is, reality check, easily Bill Belichick's only coach, only disciple that won in 20 years. Belichick had him 5 years. He gave him a tougher job every year. He is easily the most successful Belichick coach. And by the way, if you take out 1 year of his career, when, I don't know, this seems important, Deshaun Watson tore his ACL. His records in the NFL are 9-7, 9-7, 9-7, 11-5, and 10-6. Yes, in 2017, Deshaun Watson, as if Russell Wilson getting hurt wouldn't capsize Pete Carroll in Seattle, they were awful. He has a winning NFL record, which, if Deshaun Watson doesn't get hurt, is probably going to be about 60-46. He's a good football coach. He's not Belichick or Andy Reid. He's a terrible general manager. So was Chip Kelly. So was Mike Holmgren. And frankly, if you watch the Patriots draft picks, I'm not sure Belichick's a great GM. There are times offensively he's lost. Belichick as a GM. So, you know, this is classic. He's terrible. There's very little great in the NFL. Russell Wilson's great. Bill Belichick's great. It's a short list. Andy Reid, it's a short list. Very little terrible. Brian Hoyer's not very good. That's at quarterback in the NFL, that's fairly terrible. Everything else is good, pretty good, not quite as good as you'd like. Bill O'Brien's pretty good. Bad GM, good coach. Really good coach. You win a division. You watched Brian Hoyer last night with Brian Hoyer. And you win a division with Brock Osweiler. You can't tell me the guy can't coach. He can coach. But general manager, they got no cap space and no draft picks. It's a classic. He was good, but he was given too much power. And I say this all the time. No is a really good answer in your career. Say, you know, I said earlier, hire slowly and fire quickly. It's the same thing in your career. I say, and I learned this very early, say yes infrequently. Say no all the time. They offered him power. He said, yep, and just ate it. He gorged on the power, and it unraveled Bill O'Brien's coaching. He should have said, no, let's get somebody in here. This isn't what I do well. Mike Holmgren had the same problem in Seattle, and Mike Holmgren's a great coach. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
The Cowboys aren't quite as good as we'd like.
Yeah.
They've struggled to get going through the season, 1-3 through the first month. But yeah. Stephen Jones believes the team is right on the cusp of turning things around.
I just think that we're not as far away as it seems, but we do have a lot of work to do, and we're very confident in this football team. In spite of what we've seen in the first four games, we really believe we've got a great head coach, a great staff, and a great group of players that'll get the job done.
All right.
This is why I said that Atlanta win was not a win to me. I understand that there's a win column and a loss column.
Sure.
We don't have moral victories. We don't have kind of almost won. It is what it is, right? So they got the win. But there was nothing about that game that they should have felt good about. All this, oh, you know, we rallied back and we can look back on that for inspiration. The Falcons lost that game.
Yeah.
It's by luck and the football gods blessing you that day.
It happens.
That you won that game. Yes. You should not walk away from that game feeling good. You should have lost that game.
You lose a game you should win. Win a game you should lose virtually every year. Something happens out of your control.
And that's fine. But don't get crazy here. The Cowboys should be 0-4. Right?
I'm not disagreeing
with that. The only
reason
that we're not completely freaking out about the Cowboys is because they're 1-3. But they should be 0-4. The problem with the Cowboys is clearly their defense. They're first in yards per game, third in points per game. Their defense is 30th in yards allowed per game and last in points allowed per game.
Why are they so, you know, those numbers, though, are deceiving. Why do they start in a hole every game?
Yeah, they do get a lot of I want to call it garbage time, but they have to. Dak has to throw so much to get them back into the game. So there is a little bit of a deception to those numbers, but I still don't think that the offense is their problem.
No, I don't either.
But I will say, and this is what happens when you're the Dallas Cowboys with, you know, all the America's team label you know, being the biggest brand in all of sports, there comes expectations every single year.
Right.
And the Cowboys do have a new head coach this year in 2020 in a pandemic shortened season, no preseason. We don't look at the Cowboys that way because they're the Dallas Cowboys and because you still have Dak Prescott and you still have the offensive coordinator. But they are one of those teams that we probably need to give a little bit more time to get going.
Well, they play the Giants, so there's your little time.
Well, we're not going to give them time, but like we've talked about it before the season started. There's just going to be some teams that are going to struggle early because they didn't have a preseason, because they do have a new head coach, or they do have a new quarterback.
Yeah.
But that's just not the patient world that we're in these days. Right. Now, to your point, they play the Giants next.
Yeah.
Then the Cardinals, and they're both at home, and then at Washington. So they could get rolling, if you will. But again, what are those opponents, and how good are you really going to feel about it? Now, you win the games that are on your schedule.
They're
going
to beat Washington, New York, and Arizona, so we're all going to go, oh, they've got it figured out. But the problem with Dallas the last 3 years is they win a lot of games. They don't beat the right teams.
Yeah, I mean, the other issue is the NFC East is a disaster.
Yeah. You know, we're banging on Philadelphia. Philadelphia's got a real road win. A real road win, and Wentz was pretty good on that last drive to get a tie. Like, we think Philadelphia's man overboard, but I watched them Monday night, and I was like, no, Philadelphia kind of righted the ship. They're limited until they get guys back, but Philadelphia flies home for 5 hours on that flight. And if you're a coaching staff, you're like, we just went to San Francisco against Kyle Shanahan in their yard and won. That's a good flight home for 5 hours.
I feel like they probably feel good about it because of the press and the conversations about Carson Wentz, you know, going off a cliff and all that. I don't know how great of a win that really was. Not that San Francisco was terrible, but...
I want to get Doug Peterson on the show.
They don't have Garoppolo. So, I mean, again, you have to beat the teams that you play.
Right.
You know, but their schedule is what it is. Yeah. That division is just a disaster. So whatever team comes out of that disaster on top is going to be deserved, I guess. So the Bucs' victory over the Chargers on Sunday gave Tom Brady his 222nd career regular season win. That moved him past former teammate Adam Vinatieri for the NFL record for the most wins by any player at any position. And Brady commented on the accomplishment on social media, saying, I'm so grateful to all the players and coaches and organizations that have made this possible. Nothing in football is achieved as an individual. I'm so thankful to be playing a game I love and so lucky to have made so many friends along the way. By organizations, is he thanking the Bills, Jets, and Dolphins?
Yeah, no kidding. I'd like to thank the Jets dysfunction for getting me 30 wins.
Because you only have a few wins with Tampa Bay, so the other there's really not that many organizations to thank.
You know, he liked Peyton Manning, though. Peyton Manning got a choice, and Tom got a choice later in life, and they chose widely. Peyton looked at all the offensive lines and the receiving corps, and Manning and Brady inherited a team, built a little empire. But when they were both given the choice of where to go, it wasn't just a money thing. They both chose Pat Bowlen, good leadership, Tampa Bay weapons. So Manning and Brady are also really good when given the opportunity to make a call at the end of their career. They chose like smart teams where they wouldn't have to carry the entire load.
He threw for 5 touchdown passes on Sunday, and he also surpassed Warren Moon as the oldest quarterback to throw 5 touchdown passes in a game. I know that there probably are some people who still hate Tom Brady, but what we're watching with Tom Brady is historic. I mean, it's just it's pretty incredible. Like, Tom Brady made me suffer for 20 years, but I'm over it now. I really was over it after the Atlanta Super Bowl. It's like, all right, well, he's just the greatest. Like, we just got to enjoy watching the greatest to ever do it. It's a blessing. We're going to watch Tom Brady's career. So finally, Odell had a huge game for the Browns on Sunday, recording 154 total yards and 3 touchdowns. And Kevin Stefanski has admitted they need to keep getting Odell involved as much as possible. He said, I've got to do a better job of getting him involved early. I feel like I can do better. He's somebody that can really affect the game, whether you throw it to him or hand it to him. And we really just want to be mindful of that really in every game. But I felt like on that turf in Dallas, his speed would show up.
Oh, that's interesting. So he felt that was a fast turf, and that would be the difference. That's smart coaching. I didn't think about that.
5 receptions on 8 targets for 81 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 carries, and then 73 rushing yards and 1 touchdown as well. Really great performance by the Browns. I know we're banging on the Cowboys just a few minutes ago, but...
No, it was a real... They did everything
right. That was a real win for the Browns. They should feel good about where they are right now and where they're trending. Now, Nick Chubb was placed on the IR with a MCL injury, so that's a big loss for them.
How long is he out?
They're expecting him to return later this season, but he's on the IR right now. So.
Well, they're well-staffed at that position, so he's a guy I want for the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big loss for them, but...
Yes.
They're solid on the defensive side, and they are finally kind of forming an identity, which is why
yes.
I think they're able to make calls like let's actively get Odell involved early as opposed to forcing it to him, which I think is a conscious difference. Like forcing it to Odell as opposed to game planning to get Odell involved early are very different things. And I think that you have to give Baker some credit. Like he's
managing himself.
He's managing himself and he's doing everything that he needs to do to get them to win.
Yep, good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Mark Schlereth, Fox Sports, stops by, wrapping up hour 2. Can't wait to talk to Mark and his barking dog. He's got a dog, it barks. We'll get past that. Mark Schlereth coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It's October 6th by tomorrow. If you make the switch to Geico, October 7th, geico.com, you can save 15% motorcycle, RV, and credit on your car insurance. Geico.com. Mark Schlereth's got a bunch of Super Bowls, 3 in fact, multiple-time Pro Bowler, Fox Sports NFL analyst. He's been doing a great job. He had the Rams-Giants this past weekend, joining us now in Denver, Colorado, where I know his yard is perfect because it always is, even though I can't see it. Okay, let's start with this. Aaron Rodgers, Mike McCarthy had a divorce. This morning, it looks like Aaron Rodgers is the happiest he's ever been. I mean, listen, let's just be honest about it. He likes LaFleur. Generationally, they're the same age. Could it be just that simple? He likes his coach more.
I don't know that he likes his coach more. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think there's no question that he likes his coach. But I really think it's Aaron Rodgers looked at himself. Seriously, my dog again. Unbelievable. Colin, my dog loves you. You know that. Romeo loves you. I think Aaron Rodgers really looked at himself critically and said, how can I get better? I think it really was drafting a quarterback in love that really lit a fire underneath Aaron Rodgers' rear end. He said, I have got to be better. He went back. He critically looked at himself. He studied film from his MVP seasons, and he went back and he went to fixing things. And so I think that has a lot to do with Aaron Rodgers and where he is right now. Certainly, I think he likes LaFleur better. But there were some reports early last year that he didn't necessarily care for, you know, the fact that he didn't have as much responsibility at the line of scrimmage. So I really think it goes back to looking at himself saying, listen, I have one of the great franchises in history, the dynasty that never was. I need more Super Bowls if I'm going to sit at the big people table when it comes to the quarterback conversation. I think it really was himself reflecting and saying, I've got to be better.
So the Cowboys, literally, they're struggling defensively. They got a new coordinator and a new scheme. Players have called it out. DeMarcus Lawrence said we're soft. Players have said it's too complicated. Everybody in Dallas is defending Mike Nolan. What would you have to see if you were in Dallas as an owner or Stephen Jones to say, okay, it's enough? Like this is we're gonna have to make a midseason firing of Mike Nolan. What would you have to see?
Well, I mean, you would have to see a complete and total collapse of the football team. I think the biggest thing right now is the Eagles are leading that division at 1-2-1. You know, Dak Prescott has put up kind of MVP numbers that he's not getting credited for or talked about because of what Aaron Rodgers is doing, obviously what Russell Wilson is doing, what Josh Allen is doing in Buffalo. So, I mean, ultimately, that division is very winnable. So you've got to see some correction here in the next 4 or 5 weeks. If you don't, if they continue to give up points, if they continue not to be able to get off the field, then I think you start to really assess that situation. But as of right now, I think you try to fix things marginally, keep it simple, stupid kind of process, and you see exactly where you end up fitting here in the next couple of weeks.
So you had the Rams game this weekend, and I unfortunately watched all of it. And I thought to myself, God, what is wrong with them? And for the record, I mean, let's be honest. Kansas City, you know, with Mahomes and Andy Reid, will lay an occasional mini dud. I mean, it happens. Are the Rams good or not? I'm not sure after watching that Giants mess.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. They really got away from what they had been doing in the first 3 weeks where they're hanging 30 points a game on people. I called it going into the game the illusion of spread. And they get you in formations with shifts, very much like the 49ers do, pre-shifts and then motions, and then basically just cram it down your throat in the running game out of three wide formations. And they've got two wide receivers in Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp that are legitimate big-time football players, not just wide receivers. So I love what they're doing. And I was joking around with Sean McVay. I was like, hey, man, going into the film study, I'm so glad you've remembered how to coach football again. Remember last year, he had forgotten how to coach football. And now they're playing well again. They got away from what they had done on offense, and sometimes coaches get into this. They want to have a key break, so they became real static in their formations, really played a lot of 12 personnel, two tight end personnel, and they really got away from what they had been successful doing. So I'm not exactly sure why that was the case. Obviously, it was a game plan thing, but ultimately, when you take the first quarter of the season and watch them on the offensive side of the ball, I think they've been exceptional. And it really is, you know, you fix your offensive line, you go out and you get yourself a new center. He moves in from guard, plays center in Austin Blythe. You get a couple of new guards that are real physical at the point of attack. And it's amazing how well your offense is fixed. Because let me tell you, this is a team that wants to play smash mouth. They disguise it out of, you know, spread, West Coast, multiple wide receivers. But they are a smash mouth football team. That's what Sean McVay wants to be. And that's what they've been able to be, except last week was a little departure from what they had been doing. But that's just one of those duds that happens every now and again. And I expect them to be really good for you know, the remainder of the season on offense.
Dolphins, Niners, you have that game, Fox Sunday. How much do you have to see before you put Tua in? What if they struggle in the first half, or do you just keep going with Fitzpatrick?
Well, right now, I mean, I would tell you that Chan Gailey, Fitzpatrick, you know, Chan Gailey, the offensive coordinator, Fitzpatrick, they really have a great rapport together. So there's, like, offensively, don't let the final score fool you about that Seattle game. They were in that thing right up to the end. And, you know, Fitzpatrick makes some throws occasionally that make you scratch your head. And there are some things where he takes chances with the football. But I think Fitzpatrick is actually playing really good football. They're a very young team, especially up front. Got a couple of rookies they're relying on their offensive line, kind of running back by committee. They're still trying to figure themselves out. But, you know, ultimately, if you get to the point where, you know, you're week eight or week nine and you're not competitive or you're so far out of that division, that's the time when you let Tua play. But I will tell you this about Flores. You know, we talk about all the different coaches under the Bill Belichick tree that have struggled along the way. You put on the film of the Miami Dolphins, they are playing their butts off, man. They do play really hard for Brian Flores. So I don't think this is the same kind of attitude that we see with some of those other, you know, the other coaches that have been scrutinized for not being able to get out of the shadow of Bill Belichick.
By the way, in L.A. tonight, the Lakers are in the finals. The Dodgers are in the playoffs. I haven't checked lately. How are your Denver sports teams doing?
My Denver sports teams are not good right now. I mean, obviously the Nuggets played pretty well,
yes,
and so did the Avalanche, right? But, you know, I mean, you know, it's always funny to me that, you know, like for the Broncos, for instance, you know, we talk so much about speed and everybody said, hey, man, this team really drafted speed. Now they're going to be able to compete with the Kansas City Chiefs. Like to me, this is not 7-on-7 league. This is not, hey, we can run by you in 7-on-7. And so it's not fantasy football. You've got to have 11 guys on offense clicking together, and you've got to have an offensive line that can dominate the line of scrimmage. They haven't had that. Henceforth, the reason they're 1-3, and the only win, the only victory they have is against maybe the worst team in football, the New York Jets.
Yeah. Good seeing you, buddy. Mark Schlereth, he's going to have the Dolphins, Niners, had the Rams, Giants. Hopefully this one's better than that one. Good seeing you.
Good to see you too, Colin. Take care, buddy.
Boost healthy T levels, burn fat. Check it out, mdriveformen.com, mdriveformen.com. We are lucky right now in the city of Los Angeles. The Dodgers are an incredibly well-run organization. I think they just won their seventh or eighth straight division title. Very, very well run. Spend their money judiciously. Good manager, good lineup. The Rams are obviously well run. The Chargers now have a quarterback for the future. They've got to be crazy happy with the Chargers. LAFC is great. Lakers, Clippers, both good. It is a golden age in Los Angeles. Everybody's good. And this could be the year. You'll know after tonight if the Lakers have a 3-1 lead. Doesn't happen much in your life. Everybody's good. Everybody's good.
It's a good time to be in L.A.
Miami's got the Heat. The Hurricanes are playing good. And the Marlins are in the playoffs. Yep. So, yeah, that coastal elitism is just taking over the world. We can't help ourselves. We're so good at everything. Hour 3 is coming up.